This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Jay Powell gave his big speech today. We will talk about that a little bit. The virus and this economy is a story still. And then we'll go to the movies. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Friday today, everybody, the 27th day of August. Good, as always, to have you along. We know what Jay Powell thinks this afternoon because he told us. The TLDR, that's too long, didn't read, of his speech is that the Federal Reserve is about this close to starting to pull back on some of the support it has been giving this economy. But everybody needs to hang on just a bit. And that is also where we are going to start the program on this Friday. Neela Richardson is at ADP. Jordan Holman is at Bloomberg. Hey, you two.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, so Neela, let me start with you and ask you this. It seems self-evident, right? It is, as far as the status of the economy goes, a good thing if Jay Powell says, as he did today, you know what, maybe we'll be able to start pulling back on some of those bond purchases this year. That's a good thing, yes?
It is. It's a good sign that the economy is starting to be able to stand on its own two feet. It comes at a time that we're seeing an expiration in a lot of government support as well. But I also note that Jay Powell said that the jobs market recovery was both improving but turbulent. Mm-hmm. So everything has to be seen that the Fed, in terms of action through that lens, that it's not clear that all of the issues regarding the pandemic are finito. In fact, we're still dealing with the Delta virus, and that could weigh in on some of the economic progress. So it is a tenuous time, even though it's an improving time in the economy.
Right. Finito, of course, being a technical economist word, and you are the trained economist in this conversation. Jordan, let me ask you this, though, about the virus. People are changing their behavior already, right? We've talked about fewer people flying. We're going to do a story in a little bit about consumer behavior pulling back, maybe. What do you do when that's still out there?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The Delta variant threw everyone for a loop because we were definitely looking at that September timeline as kind of that back to normal. You know, kids were going to return to school, workers were going to return to work, and then things would just kind of fall into place. And to Neela's point, the government, they had the benefits run up in September with that in mind. So now retailers are kind of going back to the drawing board and trying to figure out just how much will consumer spending shift in the case that this virus becomes more widespread again.
Right. Neela, I don't want to, this is going to sound like I'm blaming consumers, but I'm not. But if I'm Jay Powell, I'm sitting there looking this, and consumer behavior is in a way getting in the way of what he wants to execute policy-wise.
Those people, they're always getting in the way of monetary policy. Yes, probably, because the Fed has a clear mandate and they'd like to execute it. The issue now, though, and you can see that in the latest consumer sentiment surveys, are people are pretty bummed out by this continuation of the pandemic. We thought, as Jordan said, that by September, this would be one and done and we could get back to normal. But it is clear that it has a lingering effect that is shadowing over economic progress. And so consumers may actually be pulling back their spending for emotional, not economic reasons. Unfortunately, emotions don't translate well into monetary policy.
Right.
So it's a real issue for the Fed right now.
Well, but look, Jordan, riddle me this. What do you do if you're a retailer who sees this coming, right? You see consumers reacting emotionally, and there's no amount of sale or promotion or what have you that's going to make people buy if in their gut they're going, oh, man, are we having to do this again?
It is a great marketing feat to convince people to shop when they really don't want to, but that is what retailers do all the time. But listen, so a lot of the retailers, they have raised their guidance for the end of the year. They actually see sales improving. So even with the uncertainty, they believe that people will still want to shop for the holiday because it's going to be more normal than this time last year. And even if people are nervous about the virus and going into stores and their behavior shifts, a lot of retailers are relying on that online business that they've beefed up over the past year and a half. So they're figuring out other ways to mitigate some of these changes that they're seeing.
So, hey, Neela, if I'm just trying to pay my mortgage or you know, do my job and take care of the kids and the house and the dog and all this, what does this entire conversation that the business press and Fed watchers are having about the taper, what does it matter?
Well, if you're doing all that, Kai, first and foremost, you're exhausted. But the second thing is,
we all
are. You're probably not going to notice a tapering in the bond purchases. That has basically served its purpose in the economy. It's allowed for the free flow of credit to large corporations. That's been a great thing. It was really important at the beginning of all this. It's not going to translate as much into the labor market. What you're seeing, though, what you're seeing right here, right now, is a rise in prices, both in food prices and gasoline prices. But as demand has outstripped supply, you're seeing a rise in prices in the things that you may typically buy. And that is going to be now your new focus in terms of the consumer, these price increases.
Right. So, Jordan, tell me, are retailers worried about price increases? I mean, you and I have spoken before in this segment about pricing power and what retailers are looking at. And now Powell again said today, you know what? It's kind of transitory. We're not worried about, you know, some of the big things sticking around inflation-wise.
Any major retailer will definitely mention that pricing is going to be an issue. And even more so, going back to the Delta variant, that is disrupting other elements of their business. You know, if you think about in Vietnam with the factory closures, that's costing retailers more to get merchandise here to the U.S. And that might show up in the pricing for consumers. So even though Jay Powell's direct quotes, you know, might not resonate with some folks, it will show up in certain ways.
I'm going to mix my metaphors here, Neela, and give you the last word. But is Powell kind of whistling past the graveyard on this inflation thing? Because as far as the eye can see, well, end of the year anyway, inflation's pretty high.
I think that he has a public statement that belies his inner turmoil on inflation. This is just me, just reading the tea leaves.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think that there is a public communication that says that this inflation is transitory. It's going to be gone in 12 months. It's due to specifics tied to the pandemic that are fading. But what people are seeing is a pickup in prices tied to supply chain mismatches. And we don't know how enduring things like a lack of semiconductors are going to be in terms of products, you know, 1 year, 2 year, 3 years right out. And the fact that this is a global supply chain has resonance. So, you know, the verdict is still a little bit out. And I think the Fed is paying close attention, very close attention to inflation dynamics, even while they put a very nice bright face on the word transitory and temporary.
Yeah. And we have to remember that he said, Powell did, in response to a David Gura question, by the way, now working for a different public radio outfit, Powell said, it's not like transitory means all these price increases are going to go away. It just means they're going to calm down a little bit, right? That's the deal.
And it really matters if wages aren't going up
right
to keep up
right
with those price increases.
Right. Neela Richardson at ADP and Jordan Holman at Bloomberg. Thanks, you two.
Thanks,
Kai. Thank you, Kai.
All right, have a nice weekend. On Wall Street to end this week, record highs, virus, Afghanistan, and all. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We got personal spending numbers this morning. Consumer spending is probably a more clear way to put that. Still growing, just slower than they were. Up 0.3% in July, consumer spending was. That is compared to more than 1% growth in June. The variable here, of course, is the Delta variant. That probably also played into this morning's report on consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan. Neela, I think, mentioned that. At pandemic lows was the headline on consumer sentiment. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab explains what all that's going to mean for the businesses that have been thriving in this pandemic and for those that haven't.
For a glorious few months, Sarah Garlitz in Pennsylvania felt like she could breathe easy.
I would go into stores without masks and I would even let my son do it. But that has definitely backtracked in the past couple weeks.
She's worried about the Delta variant, so she canceled a road trip she planned with her father, is working from home more often, and is doing early morning grocery shopping again.
I've, like, turned into my mother. I'm waiting in the parking lot, and then I go in as soon as it opens.
I got a lot of messages today from people who have canceled gym memberships and travel to work conferences. And sure, these are anecdotes, but there's also data. Open table reservations have been declining since June. Southwest Airlines recently said bookings have dropped and cancellations have increased. And there are those softening consumer spending numbers. Wendy Edelberg is an economist at the Brookings Institution.
The Delta variant creates some significant risks for what happens to overall spending over the next couple of months.
If people stay home again, she says demand for services could dip and demand for goods could flatten. How many more home improvement projects can people really pick up? And Carlos Torelli, a marketing professor at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, says the fortune of companies like Peloton, DoorDash, and Netflix could rise.
Consumption on the go, as you please, in bits, it, for a generation, is becoming more the norm. And there's where you start seeing changes.
That may give these companies a more permanent place in our everyday lives. Torelli himself is working in person, but still doing meetings on Zoom.
I don't have to be moving from one office to another, sometimes in different buildings. So you can pack more meetings.
Sounds fun. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
If somehow you miss us on your local public radio station, we got a podcast too, if you need it. Check it out. Two news items and a question as a way to get into this next story. Item one, should you have missed it, is that last night the Supreme Court blocked the latest eviction moratorium from the Centers for Disease Control. Protections for renters in areas with substantial and high levels of the virus had been extended through October the 3rd. The court, though, said the CDC overstepped. Item two is that this week the Treasury Department said that as of the end of last month, just 11% of the nearly $50 billion allocated by Congress for rent relief had actually been paid out. 11%. The question, which we put to Marketplace's Amy Scott at our news meeting this morning, is what happens now?
Deirdre Thomas first applied for rental assistance in DeKalb County, Georgia, back in February. She'd had to stop working as an insurance broker when she lost her child care because of the pandemic. Eventually, she learned her application had been lost in a cyber attack. Now about $25,000 behind on rent and utilities, Thomas applied again last month.
I actually just received an approval yesterday in my email, thanks to the help of, you know, the DeKalb County Legal Aid Assistance.
Housing advocates say many others who need the aid don't know about it or think they won't qualify. Also, many low-income tenants don't have access to computers and scanners to file the necessary paperwork. Diane Yentel with the National Low Income Housing Coalition says states like Texas and Virginia are doing pretty well getting the money out. But about 15 states, including Alabama, South Carolina, and Wyoming, have spent less than 5% of their money.
We have found that many of the slower spenders are the same programs to have overly complicated and complex application systems to require burdensome documentation.
She worries last night's Supreme Court ruling could lead to a wave of evictions. About 8 million adults are behind on their rent, according to the latest census data. Carissa Hatfield is a staff attorney with the Homeless Persons Representation Project in Baltimore, where she says 20,000 households are waiting for rental assistance.
I've definitely had to call a number of my clients today who were covered under the CDC order and tell them that they are no longer covered.
This week, the Treasury Department issued new guidance to try to speed up the process of getting relief out by cutting some of the red tape to qualify. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Like a first date, there was a lot of flirting.
That is one way to try to close a deal, I suppose. But first, let's do the numbers. Well, here we go. On a Friday, the Dow Industrials up 242 points, about 0.6%, 35,455 on the blue chips. The NASDAQ gained 183 points. That is 1.2%, finished at 15,129. S&P 500 up 39 points. 0.8%, 4,509, S&P at 4,509, kind of wild. For the week, the Dow added about 1%, the NASDAQ grew 2.8%, the S&P 500 up 1.5%. Workday jumped 0.9%. Today, the HR and financial software maker posted earnings that handily beat expectations. Subscription revenue, by the way, jumped 23% from last year. Other firms reporting today included Gap, up 0.6%. The clothing retailer posted better than forecast quarterly revenue and earnings. Peloton, the pseudo bicycle company, dropped 8.5% after missing Wall Street estimates. You want to ride a bike? Go outside. That's all I'm saying. Bond prices rose. Yield on the 10-year. Don't at me, by the way. Yield on the 10-year, down to 1.31%. You're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Over the past 24 hours or so, some of the worst air quality on the entire planet has been in parts of Nevada and Central and Northern California. Smoke, obviously, from wildfires out here. Even the East Coast has been seeing it and getting air quality alerts about it this summer. Setting aside for just a moment the proximate cause, the obvious effects of a warming planet, there are short and possibly long-term direct economic effects, including on people's health and thus the costs thereof. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
These days, Susan Hagen checks the air quality where she lives near Lake Tahoe in Nevada constantly.
Right now, the AQI is 440. And that last night it was up high 500s.
An air quality index, or AQI, above 150 is considered unhealthy. Above 300, it's considered hazardous.
Every day you wake up and things are just brown and there's ash on the ground.
So she mostly stays in. Sometimes she even wears a mask in the house.
I'm thinking about all the toxins going into my lungs. It just terrifies me.
Smoke from wildfires can cause bronchitis and trigger asthma attacks and heart attacks. Alina Kraft, Senior Director of Climate and Health at the Environmental Defense Fund, says that's all just in the short term.
Over the long term, we know that particulate matter can actually cause cancer. I'm concerned about, obviously, those long-term health implications year after year.
With climate change making wildfires more common and severe, more and more people are winding up in emergency rooms and doctor's offices.
Americans are paying tens of millions of dollars each year to cope with the health problems triggered by wildfire smoke.
Vijay Limai is at the Natural Resources Defense Council. A recent study he worked on looked at smoke-related healthcare costs in two states in just 1 year.
In Colorado, we ended up with about $23 million in illness costs, and in Washington, about $55 million. When you factor in the economic impact of lost lives, we're talking about nearly $4 billion in health damages.
And Lumai says those costs are poised to skyrocket. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Moviegoers over in China are having a big couple of weekends. The government's unofficial 10-week or so long summer blackout for imported movies over there is over. This weekend, it's Free Guy opening, the one with Ryan Reynolds. Last week, it was Luca from Disney and Pixar, made a modest $5 million, mostly COVID caution, people are thinking. But even without the pandemic, Hollywood is not a lock for the top of the Chinese box office anymore. Marketplace's Jennifer Peck has that one from Shanghai.
You know the movie Kill Bill? There's an epic fight scene where Uma Thurman's character fights off dozens of masked men. That scene was filmed in Beijing. The year was 2002, and China was not a typical shooting location for Hollywood. So why Beijing? Kill Bill's executive producer, E. Bennett Walsh, recalls a conversation he had with director Quentin Tarantino.
He said, I want to do Kill Bill Volume 1 in Asia. I could make House of Blue Leaves and a soundstage in L.A., but I want the sensibilities of the crew to seep into the movie.
The collaboration between Hollywood and China at that point, he says, was great.
It was like a first date. And like a first date, there was a lot of flirting.
Any Hollywood movies released in China back then easily topped the box office, like the 2009 sci-fi film Avatar.
Outstanding.
That was one of the first American movies Harris Liu saw in theaters, quite a luxury in eastern Jiangsu province.
In the early 2000s, movie tickets cost over $14, and my parents made just under $150 a month.
He says growing up, he might watch all American movies allowed into China, up to 34 a year. Not anymore, he says. Chinese films are catching up. In 2012, Chinese comedy Lost in Thailand hit 1 billion yuan at the box office. Suddenly, film was a hot investment, says Chris Bremble, CEO of Base Media, a visual effects and animation firm in Beijing.
I remember sitting, you know, here in my office with a group of rare earth miners, and they were like, we have all this money, we'd like to invest it in movies.
Chinese money also poured into Hollywood. David Lee is an American film producer and distributor in Beijing.
Wanda Studio bought AMC, you know, for over $2 billion. You know, Perfect World invested over $500 million in a slate of films in Universal.
Not everyone was having a good time. Sean Yue is a film producer of the Chinese blockbuster films Detective Chinatown 2 and 3.
The impression was Hollywood want Chinese money, but they don't want to listen to Chinese people.
I was at a premiere of a movie and talking to the Hollywood executive, and the Chinese executives came over, and the Hollywood guy says, are you going to pay us yet? Like, the movie's done, you know, and there was a big argument.
Bremble of Base Media. He says by 2018, China's government had put an end to the crazy deals. The trade war had started, then a pandemic hit. Now there's a backlog of Hollywood films waiting to be released in Chinese theaters. Again, movie distributor Lee.
A film typically takes anywhere from 1 to 3 months to secure the necessary approvals. With the trade war, we're looking at 3 to 6 months.
Hollywood studios also face problems with China's revenue share and film quotas. They can bypass these limits with a co-production. That's where at least a third of the financing and principal cast are Chinese. But it's tough. One of the largest co-productions was in 2016, a fantasy adventure called The Great Wall.
Why are you here?
We came to trade.
You lie.
The film had all the ingredients for success. It starred Matt Damon and was directed by China's top guy, Zhang Yimou. But the movie was a flop. Damon told Mark Maron on the WTF podcast last month that he knew the film was a disaster. He recalled a conversation he had with the director about a scene he didn't get. They spoke through a translator named Frank.
Frank says, yes, the director agrees with you, but says, since this is a Hollywood movie, yeah. And I was like, oh God, no, no.
Damon says the director was making a, quote, Hollywood film rather than sticking to his vision. Another co-production called Meg, a shark film, did well in both the U.S. and China in 2018. Could there be another like it? Again, Bremble of Base Media.
I think it's hard to serve both masters.
Producer Yue thinks it is possible, but instead of one movie, he says, make two films from one script.
We're going to write a great script that we know is going to work in China. If the film becomes successful, I will took part of the profit and send it back to the U.S. and then produce it again in American way.
Hollywood and China still want to work together, he says. They're just not sure how to restart that romance. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, which seems, honestly, kind of ridiculous to have to be saying here before Labor Day. But if you happen to be thinking of the 2021 holiday shopping season already, well, good on you. The rest of you, you better get going. Yahoo Finance picked up on a research note from Bank of America, which said, and this is a quote, buy it early. Oh, and also whatever it is going to be more expensive. You know the drill, higher demand, supply chain backlogs, lather, rinse, repeat. I'm going to say it again, though. It's not even Labor Day. All right, we're out of here. Going to take the next couple of days off. Before we go, though, we are going to bookend Jay Powell's speech with this item of economic context from the White House Office of Management and Budget today. OMB figures inflation is going to run 4.8% in the fourth quarter of this year. That's about where everybody else is guessing it'll be as well. Transitory or not to be transitory, that is the question. Couldn't help it, sorry. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? Oh, yeah, this is 8 p.m.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.